Hello, Chris English here with another edition of our At Home This Morning magazine programme, a show that we hope will provide you with a look at our world, both in and around the city of Brighton Hove and a bit further afield, all for both our older listeners and those not so old. In this programme, I'll be chatting to a quartet of TV stars, including singer Jodie Prenger and actor Daniel Casey, who'll be starring in a production of the toe-curling comedy drama Abigail's Party that'll be coming to the Theatre Royal early in the new year. Now, as regular listeners will know of my love of musical theatre, I'll also be talking to BBC One Television's Strictly Come Dancing star Joanne Clifton and singer Ben Adams, who will both be appearing in the classic Rocky Horror Show at the Theatre Royal Brighton over Christmas. We'll also be bringing you the latest on the up-to-the-minute topic of elder abuse with Gail Shanahan from the charity of the same name. And Andy Cosby from Age UK Brighton will be here with news of how we oldies can help ourselves avoid some of the pitfalls that the winter weather will all too soon bring us. All that's to come in this edition of At Home This Morning, our magazine programme that's produced for Brighton's only truly local radio station, Radio Reverb, broadcasting on 97.2 FM, DAB Digital Radio, and online at radioreverb.com. But to get things moving, let's hear about that new version of the acidic Abigail's Party that was first broadcast on BBC Television in 1977 and featured that toe-curling cocktail party hosted by Beverly, Jodie Prenger, and her husband Lawrence, Daniel Casey. And with Jodie, who first came to fame as the winner of the television series I'd Do Anything, which was a search for an unknown who was the star in a new production of the musical Oliver in the West End, and Daniel Casey, who himself lives in Sussex and is perhaps best known as the detective in the long-running saga Midsummer Murders on television. Now, they came to the Theatre Royal recently and I went along to meet them, and it was Jodie who turned the tables a little on me and asked me the first question.
Do you remember the film with Alison Steadman?
I certainly remember it being on television.
Yeah. It's just brilliant, though, isn't it? It's one of those great British classics that has just resonated throughout, you know, the decades even, which is crazy to say. So, yeah, we all can't wait to get stuck into it.
So what have you been doing with yourself in between?
In between, just finished a musical, Fat Friends, a Kay Mellor musical, and doing a podcast, the Mishaps podcast, and going to film on Russell T Davies' new series, Years and Years. So that's over the past 6 months where I've been, and it's just to keep myself out of mischief, really. So that's just that's why I keep working.
I thought you were going to say keep yourself in mischief.
You know us too well.
Abigail's Party, it's quite an acerbic piece,
but it is, I think that's what people have, you know, always come to the theatres to watch it, or kind of played it on the, I'm going to say, beta of VHS, isn't it? But that's why it's still so popular today. It's a tremendous piece by Mike Lee.
And do you think it will show its age? Because it's 40 years, isn't it?
It's 40 years, but it's a time capsule, isn't it? And I think that's what's so glorious about it. It's reminiscent, but it's also relevant to how we act with each other today.
I think one of the things about it is you've got these three disparate kind of groups of people. You've got Beverly and Lawrence. You've got Tony and Ange, who are in relationships, and then you've got Sue, who's a divorcee. But I think modern times, you still see people who are in relationships, and you think, how on earth are they still together? People in abusive relationships think, why don't they leave? And I think that's a timeless thing. And I think seeing people striving and trying their hardest to get on in life and yet not achieving it, I think that's a timeless quality.
So it will always be fresh.
Yeah, it will always be fresh. I think it's also been looked at with our modern eyes. So I think there will be a freshness anyway, because it's, because we're bringing. So, I mean, I was five when it was, but the original, and you weren't born.
I wasn't born, exactly.
You weren't here, and but so I think you're bringing a fresh eyes to it anyway. So we'll bring our kind of modern feel to it during the rehearsal period. You look back for historical context, of course you do, but then you also know that it has a relevance today.
Jodie, will you be Alison Steadman, or will you be Jodie Pringer?
Yes, I'll be Alison Steadman.
You'll be Beverly.
I'd love to. I'll be my own Beverly. It's quite. It is daunting. Don't get me wrong. When you've got such a tremendous actress, which is Alison Steadman, I have met her. I'm not name dropping, but I was very nervous when I did meet her. But she's the loveliest lady. So I just want to do her justice. And I just think, and I'm not just saying that because, you know, you sat opposite, but you know, there is a tremendous cast put together. And under the direction of Sarah, I'm really excited about this.
Cucumber and
cheese and pineapple.
Cheese and pineapple.
I mean, you can have a cucumber if you want. I just remember to put it on my shopping list, because I whip in and I whip out.
But it's part of the show, isn't it?
It is part of the show. I always loved Shirley Valentine, and you have to cook, you know, chips and egg live on stage. So a cheese and pineapple is absolute bliss to me. So, yeah. But I'll serve quite a few drinks.
I keep those gin and tonics coming.
Oh, the gin and tonics.
Keep those gin and tonics.
I hope they're all lovely to me, because I will swap it for real alcohol. I have done that in the past. Enjoy!
and generally, you're obviously looking forward to it. It's classed as a comedy, but it's like
all of Mike Leigh's work. I mean, it is funny, but it's funny because you're watching the tragedy of these people's lives. I think that's what's hilarious about it. To be doing something by Mike Leigh is amazing. He's one of my heroes. I mean, you know, as an actor, you can't fail to be excited by, you know, doing some of his work. And I think people, in talking to Sarah when they did the production in Bath a couple of years ago, the responses were great. I mean, the comedy within it is amazing, but it is born. I mean, like all great comedy is born from seeing someone else's pain and misery, isn't it?
And
don't worry, you're safe with us.
I'll believe you. Do you get to sing?
No singing. Well, that's a good thing though.
Why?
Well, just taking a bit of time off. The Voce is getting rested.
But do you enjoy acting or singing?
Oh, I love it. I think things like Shirley Valentine, and for me, and One Man, Two Governors, I adore kind of theatre in general, but working on plays is something I really cherish.
And your special moment in the show?
Special moment?
You'll find that, because we're heading into rehearsals at the moment. So we are. I think you'll find that as you go. I think that'll be to come. It's she's a cracking actress. She's great. I've seen her and she's brilliant. And but as performance as well. Yes, she's got. We all know she's got a great singing voice. But you know, we all do lots of different things, and I think that's what's beautiful. People are going to come and see her.
Maybe
do
Laurie
something.
Sing along to some classical.
I can bob in my eyes like James Galway. That'll be good. I'll do that live on stage for her. But I think that's what's lovely about it is people get to see all the other strings that she's got to her bow, and we all have that in our locker, you know.
And final word from Jodie.
Come and see it. You've got to come and see it. Are you coming?
I will.
What night are you coming?
Don't know yet.
I was asking so I can get your cucumber. That was all. I'm just checking. Want it nice and fresh for you.
The production of Abigail's Party, starring Jodie Pringer and Daniel Casey, will be at the Theatre Royal from Thursday the 10th to Saturday the 19th of January. But now it's time to turn from the frivolous to the very serious, namely elder abuse. And to find out more, I welcomed Gail Shanahan from the charity of the same name to the At Home This Morning studio. And Gail first explained what the term elder abuse actually means.
There are different categories of it, unfortunately. The main ones that people are probably familiar with are financial abuse, sexual abuse, psychological abuse, physical abuse, and neglect. new legislation a few years back introduced some other areas and other categories, but those are the areas that have been around for a long time. And basically it is where an older person is hurt or abused in any way and in any form that can come under those categories by somebody who is known to them. And actually within the definition of elder abuse, it is within a relationship where there is an expectation of trust. So it's where an older person is hurt or neglected or physically or sexually abused or verbally abused, emotionally or psychologically abused, mistreated in any way and in any setting. So it can happen to people everywhere, in their own homes, if they're in supported units, if they're in hospital, unfortunately, if they're in residential homes or care homes. That's actually what it is. And it's, unfortunately, it's an increasing problem.
It seems to be the subject of today, if you like.
Yes.
Why is that?
Well, it's a complicated situation, Chris. Obviously, these things are never simple. So, I won't pretend I could explain it all. But I think people are much more aware of it as well, particularly through probably the most recent thing of the increase of financial abuse, which covers a huge range of things, but includes this whole increasing area of problems that people refer to as scams, which are things in the online crime, internet crime, mailing lists, all the things that people are becoming sadly a bit more familiar with now, all connected with getting money from people. And it is unfortunately an increasing problem. There are lots of reasons that our organisation, our parent organisation particularly, is trying to highlight. It could, you know, part of it may be that people are actually, there are more older people living longer. A lot of those people actually have assets and have quite a lot of money, whereas decades ago, you know, for example, the house they may be living in now is worth a lot more than it was decades ago. So they are more of a target for financial abuse. Where it happens to people in homes and in hospitals, there are lots of reasons. I mean, there are lots of people who would just say that anyone who abuses an older person is just a bad person and there are no excuses. But of course, there are wider problems. So, for example, as I said, in homes or hospitals, a lot of people would say that there are just not enough people, not enough workers. They're not being paid enough. They're working too many hours. So therefore, you create situations of pressure. They're maybe not getting trained properly. So it could be a lot of elements that are creating situations where people are sort of under too much pressure or at breaking point and then take it out on other people. None of which is an excuse, but I think, you know, when people discuss this seriously, they have to look at why is this happening and why is it increasing. But I think for us, the important thing is recognising it is increasing and actually looking with authorities at how to get it stopped and deal with it and recognised.
And how can victims, either existing or people that might think they're a victim, mm-hmm. how can they identify that they are?
Well, I think, in a way, you know, anybody generally, most people would know they're being mistreated. You know, if somebody shouts at someone, if someone hits someone or assaults them more seriously, if someone takes someone's money, if someone threatens someone, people are in a home or a hospital or at home and meant to be receiving health care of some kind and that isn't being given to them. You know, most people will know that's not right. What they might not realise is actually that is them being abused. They might just, you know it's wrong, but not realise it's abuse. And the problem, again, is that if people are then victims, if that is happening to them, not everyone will know where to go for help, particularly in the cases where someone might be in a hospital or a home or receiving help at home for a health problem. That's, you know, almost reinforced by the fact that actually they feel very vulnerable and they're dependent on that help, in inverted commas. And therefore, that's often even more of a barrier for them to feel, how can they report it? Who do they report it to? So there are, again, lots of factors that you know, enable people to carry on abusing someone where they're dependent on them.
Now, you'd think it was a criminal offence, but apparently it isn't, is it?
It isn't. Elder abuse in its own right is not yet not recognised as a criminal offence. again, our organisation, Action on Elder Abuse, has been campaigning now to have elder abuse recognised as what's called an actionable offence, like child abuse is, and actually like even abuse of animals is a criminal offence, but not elder abuse. And there are lots of, obviously, again, these situations are complicated and there might be people who think that's not necessary. There are other people who say it should be recognised as a hate crime, like a lot of other sectors of the community are. But the fact is, one really important reason to get it recognised as a specific crime is that it would then be recorded by the authorities when a crime is committed. It would be recorded in lots of different ways, but specifically highlighted elder abuse, which then means that the figures and the official statistics that everybody will have will show the nature of the problem and the scale of it and the fact that it is increasing. Whereas now it's very difficult to get a clear official picture based on statistics. A lot of stuff is anecdotal and a lot of it it's a lot harder to get the research and the information together because systems are not geared to identifying it.
Has it become more prevalent because older people are by nature more trusting?
That is a part of the problem. The other issue that links it again to arguing that it should be made a crime is actually that currently the penalties against people who abuse older people are generally felt to be very, very minimal and basically not strong enough. We've got a lot of information as an organisation, again, of situations and crimes and acts of abuse. And in many cases, there are just fines. There might be community work orders for people of doing some community hours or suspended sentences. And really, they're very lenient penalties, a lot of people would argue. And really, again, you know, the preventative aspect of it and the punishment, if the punishment doesn't match the crime, generally you could say, well, that's why people keep committing those crimes. So that is definitely our belief that that's one of the reasons it's increasing, is that the deterrents aren't there. But absolutely, there are more older people. Many of the higher age range of older people are from that generation that do trust people. They inherently trust people. You know, maybe the next generation's coming along and we're all a bit more cynical and more suspicious. So it's perhaps harder to get past people as time moves on. But absolutely, they are more trusting. That's definitely a factor.
And your organisation, where does that fit into things?
Well, Action on Elder Abuse, we're slightly two separate things in the service that I'm running locally, which is helping people after the abuse has been dealt with, which obviously I can tell you about as well. But Action on Elder Abuse is an independent charity. It's now UK based, and it has for 20 plus years actually been the only organisation focusing solely on elder abuse. And it has been really just campaigned for many years to get local authorities and governments to recognise the problem exists. And it's been worked with successive governments and local authorities to help set up systems and teams and services to actually provide the safeguarding, create safeguarding teams who are really now the people who, in the statutory services, who pick up abuse cases. Really, that's been its basic reason to exist, is to highlight, to make people aware that this problem exists, to encourage governments to take it seriously. And again, you need legislation to get these things recognised and to get local authorities to set up systems and services to deal with it, and for governments to realise the scale of the problem.
So if people listening to this think that they may have been abused or they know somebody that has, mm-hmm. how do they go about moving that forward?
Nowadays every local authority has to have safeguarding teams and safeguarding teams for adults. So people could call their local authority and they will then be put through to the appropriate people. Obviously, people can call the police and again, they'd be there to help, but they also have specific teams that deal with these situations. But of course, we know that actually can be a deterrent itself. I mean, that's a frightening call to make, whether you're the victim or someone concerned about someone or suspicious of a situation. And everybody understands that, that's a big call. So one of the things that we can offer and we know is very helpful for people is actually that, again, Action on Elder Abuse has a free confidential helpline that operates Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. And people can ring that, talk about the situation they're in or that they're aware of, and our advisors will give them information, guidance. It sometimes is just about people reassuring people and confirming that they're right in their suspicions and that what they see or what's happening to them is abuse. And then those people feel able then to make the call to the local help. But if not, our organisation can help people move that on and make those contacts. And we can tell them about what help there is in their local area, what their options are, you know, what may happen as a consequence. So it's a very helpful line, we hope very valuable for people, and it's fully confidential and free.
And that number is?
That number is 080-8808-8141.
We were hearing from Gail Shanahan from the charity Action on Elder Abuse. But now it's time to extend another welcome to our studio to Age UK Brighton's Andy Crosby, who first explains the importance of care in the winter months to come.
Very important to look after all aspects of your health, particularly during the winter period. So there's a number of different things that you can do to ensure your safety and your well-being throughout that time. And we make a lot of recommendations and support a lot of people with different information.
Such as?
There's various things in terms of staying fit and well and safe. We recommend things like in your own home, doing things basically like ensuring your smoke alarms are regularly checked, and if necessary, you can get a free check from the local fire and rescue service. Things like keeping moving when you're at home, because it's quite easy to sit down in front of a fire and stay quite static, but that's not good for you. So keep moving during the day. So if you're staying indoors, do things like breaking up your chores so they occur at different times throughout the day. Try and ensure you have a nutritious hot meal once a day and hot drinks throughout. And then there's other things you can do, like, for example, you can, obviously everyone's going through getting their flu jabs at the moment, so ensuring you've got your flu jab, whatever age you are. They have specific, all the GP surgeries have been running specific clinics for the over 65s or for general people who have carer needs or requirements. So.
There have been rumours that there's a shortage of flu jabs.
There has, Age UK Brighton and Hove have actually been working with a number of GPs trying to support particularly the over 65 flu clinics. And throughout this winter period, we're aware that there has been certainly a slowing up in supplies coming through to the GP surgeries. So when they've organised a clinic, we're always checking in advance to make sure it's still going ahead. There have been delays, so we're told the supplies are there. It's just about getting them to the right clinics at the right time.
But it's not too late.
No, absolutely. I think if you go to your GPs even now, you can still, if you haven't had that, it's still important to get that jab.
What about wrapping up warm when you go out? I mean, it's a simple thing to say, but so many of us forget that. How important is it to keep warm inside?
Very important. As a young boy, my mother always talked about not being overdressed indoors, about making sure you feel the benefit when you go outside. But when you do go outside, it is important to try and have a few layers on. Think about the extremities, like your head and your hands. So a nice woolly hat and gloves and things like that will help. When you go in and out of buildings, try and be aware of the different temperatures, because it's quite easy to overheat if you don't remember to take some of those layers off. I mean, certainly in terms of overheating, it's really important to make sure you're hydrating as well throughout the day. So try and drink water as and when you can, just to help you.
People I know are concerned about heating their homes.
Absolutely.
Now, how important is it that the home is universally heated rather than just the one bar fire in the living room?
Absolutely. It is very important. I know with heating bills getting higher and higher, and I know, for example, the standard fuel bill has gone up by over 168% in the last 10 years. So it's a problem for everyone. So it is important to ensure that your home is heated well. If you can be at risk if you try and heat just one room in the house, whether that's the main room that you spend, which for a lot of people is the living room, or they might have one bar heater in the bedroom, whatever. But there are quite strict guidelines for what sort of temperatures are good to live within. They say 21 degrees for a living environment and 18 degrees for a sleeping environment. In fact, we provide a winter wrapped up booklet, which is free to anyone who can ring into us at Age UK, and we can send those out to people. And that includes a home thermometer, so you can keep track of what temperature your rooms are.
If the listeners are worried about the cost of these bills, mm-hmm. of doing this heating, do you provide ways in which they can both save money by insulation and help with paying the bills?
Absolutely, yes. We've got a few ways in which we can help. One key thing for individuals is, because of the cost of bills, is to look at what sort of benefits you might be entitled to. So we run free welfare benefit checks to people, so we can you can either come in to the office and have an appointment where you can go through those, or we can even do home visits if you're unable to get to the office. And in that, we'll look at what your income is at the time being, if there's additional income that you might be entitled to, and then we can help access things like the Warm Homes discount, which can get you up to £140 off your fuel bills. We can support you to look at things like switching tariffs, and we work in partnership with organisations such as Money Advice and Besco, who can help specifically with finding the best deals for individuals. So there's lots of different ways to help. We provide a number of different bits of information. We've got a few wonderful leaflets, as I said, the winter wrapped up. We've got a Save Energy, Pay Less, which gives you lots of different handy tips for how you can save energy in your cooking and living environment. So there's lots of different ways we can help.
How important is being able to get out in the weather, in the poorer weather, when it can be cold, it can be miserable out there, and you think, no, I'll stay in? How important is it to avoid isolation by actually making yourself go out?
Absolutely, it's incredibly important. That's one of the problems that a lot of people experience throughout the winter months, is that we don't live in the most clement countries, but it is important to make that effort to get out. There's obviously the need to get out for your shopping, but one of the really important things about getting out is that getting some sort of healthy walks and maintaining your energy, but also that social aspect. So going to meet up with friends, go to clubs or groups. There's a lot of lunch clubs available for people to access. There are more health risks from actually staying dormant and isolated within your own home, and that there's because of all the various issues around winter and not looking after yourself during those periods, that can. Not wishing to scaremonger, but that can lead to a number of deaths in particularly older people.
So, in conclusion, what is the message to older people and those not so old in the winter weather?
Try and keep yourself active, keep moving, eat healthily, and drink lots of water when you're in the home. Be conscious of not isolating yourself. If you are staying at home, move about on a regular basis. Try not to heat just one room. If you are struggling with heating costs, then by all means speak to us at Age UK. We can help with finding better ways to cover the costs of those or to find alternatives. But importantly, make sure you go out as well. Make sure you keep those connections with your friends, your family, your loved ones. It's important to try and maintain your normal lifestyle. We don't live near the equator, so we have to deal with the weather that we've got. But it is important to try not to let it rule your life.
And Andy, you say contact Age UK?
Absolutely, yes.
The phone number?
The Age UK phone number is 01273 720 603.
Andy, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I was talking there to Andy Crosby from Age UK Brighton about some of the things that we can do to avoid a trip to A&E over the winter months. But as I mentioned at the start of this edition of At Home This Morning, it's time to hear now from two of the stars of the Rocky Horror Show that runs at the Theatre Royal until Saturday the 5th of January. They are Strictly Come Dancing champion Joanne Clifton and boy band A1's Ben Adams. And when I met up with them at the theatre recently, the pair, who'd recently worked together in the musical Flashdance, were in something of a saucy mood and first mentioned their outlandish costumes.
You do dress up in your suspenders and corsets.
Well, it's all about transsexuals and transvestites, so I'll join the transvestite gang.
And this is the... not the first time you've been in Brighton. You were both here with Flashdance.
Yeah, we did a 16-month tour together, didn't we, in Flashdance?
Yeah, we came here, I think it was in the summer, wasn't it, in Brighton? We had a lovely time here. Slightly colder now, but but as I can see with Joe sitting next to a radiator there. But we're still going to brave the beach, aren't we?
Yes, of course we are.
Really?
No.
But we are here for a whole month. Like, we've got 3 weeks of performances. It's opening here, which is really exciting. And then we've got a week before that of tech here, so we've got a whole month in Brighton. It's going to be great.
Now, turning the clock back a bit, and Strictly, needless to say, have you been watching it this season?
Oh, of course I've been watching it, because my brother's still on it, obviously. So I'm supporting him. My housemates are on it as well. That's Neil and Katya Jones, so I'm watching them. And I went to Blackpool last weekend to watch. It was really weird sat in the audience and not being able to get up. And they had Gloria Estefan fan there as well, who I love, and I wanted to get up and dance with them. But, yeah, well, actually, I'm really happy on stage, to be honest.
But you prefer stage rather than dance?
Right now, yes. I've danced since I was 4, so that's what? How many years is that? 31 years? Is that 31 years? Yeah, that's 31 years I've been dancing. I'm really happy on stage at the minute.
And Ben, have you ever done Strictly?
I have done Strictly, actually. I did Strictly in Norway, which was strange.
Where did you come, Ben?
I came to Norway and then I came back to England after
But where
that.
Did you come in the
yes,
competition?
Yes, I came second.
Where did I come? In the main street?
Yeah, but you've been training all your life. I did it for like 3 months. So coming second after 3 months is pretty awesome.
I still had to dance with a beginner.
So? Anyway, I have done it, and I'm really rather good at dancing, but I won't be able to show you in Rocky Horror.
Yes, you will. Time Warp.
Yes, I'll show you in Time Warp how brilliant my dancing is.
A few moves in Time Warp.
A few moves, a few pelvic thrusts.
I'm actually looking forward to the fact that I don't have to do that much dancing in Rocky Horror. Like, literally dancing all my life and then doing Flashdance for the last 16 months, which obviously loads of dancing. And then this, we've basically just got Time Warp, and I'm actually really looking forward to it.
So it would be different.
Yeah, really different. I can't rely on anything dance-wise. I have to be good enough with singing and acting in this one. So,
talking about Rocket, it's coming to Brighton. It's been here before.
It opened here before as well.
And there's a lot of history to it. And Brighton being Brighton, of course, the audience will be more dressed up than the cast.
Absolutely, yeah. That's part of the fun of the show, I think. I mean, I went to see Rocky Horror having not known anything about it ever really, and then I went to see the stage show, and everybody in the audience was dressed up and everybody knew all the songs. In fact, I knew all the songs and I didn't know I knew all the songs. So it was it's just such a fun show for everybody involved, the cast, the people that come to see it, the people that work, you know, at the theatre. It's just going to be an amazing time at Christmas.
But even like, they're already going for it here, aren't they? They've got the mural going on, and they've got the chocolate place doing all chocolates of Rocky Horror. It's amazing.
They've got red tinsel I can see just being put up behind us. It's amazing.
Is that a good thing, that a show has such a following? Everybody knows
I
it.
I think so.
Is it hard for you?
No, it'll be amazing for us. Like, literally everyone we've spoken to either say it's their favourite show, or anyone who's been in it have said to us it's the most fun thing you'll ever do in your life. So just doing, we've only been rehearsing 2 days, but already yesterday we were sat around the table just reading it, and some of the people who have been in it before, they knew what the audience shout out and stuff, so they started, while we were reading it, they were shouting out what the audience shout out, and it's absolutely hilarious. It's going to be so much fun.
And a Christmas show?
It's a sort of Christmas show, but I mean, I would probably recommend going to seeing Rocky Horror Show over any panto that anyone's thinking about going to. Cancel your tickets, get your money back, get some tickets for Rocky Horror. I don't know if there are that many tickets left for Rocky Horror.
No,
it's that
I think
popular.
It's
selling very well.
It's selling very well, yeah. So yeah, get your tickets fast.
What is Rocky Horror, for those few people out there that have never heard of it, what's it about?
We play two central characters that start off very square. And they're your typical American high school kids, I guess,
and sweethearts. And we just get engaged.
Yeah, and then we end up having our car breaks down, and we end up at a castle where all of our virginal thoughts and anything else is just stripped back. You know, I end up in stockings and stilettos and blah, 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 and you end up all over in your knickers and stuff like that. So it sort of goes on this journey, and then it turns out that, you know, those people are from a planet called Transsexual.
Transylvania.
So it's bonkers, but it's, I think if you just come and just want to have an amazing time, this is the show to come and see.
Is dressing up essential, or can...
I've heard that people who've been in the past who haven't dressed up have felt really out of it. Like, they go there and literally almost the whole audience are dressed up, and the ones that don't feel like, oh, we should have done.
I think just wear a hat of some sort and you'll be fine. Feather boa or something. You know, you don't have to... Don't be afraid that you have to dress up. I think it's dress up if you want, but you don't have to. There'll be plenty of people there that aren't dressed up as well.
And do you, as a cast... look forward to that involvement, that bit across the footlights, to take it back?
Okay. I think so. I mean, sometimes when you're on stage, it's quite easy to forget that the audience are there, especially when you're doing sort of more serious pieces. Mm. And, you know, some of our scenes in Flashdance, you know, it wasn't a comical piece or anything like that, so you just sort of do it again and again. But when you actually do get feedback from the audience and they're sort of joining in and being a part of the show just as much as you are, but not getting paid for doing it. I think it's going to be a really fun thing to do. As you know, we haven't started it yet, so we don't know to what extent it's going to be. I think it's more of a case of trying to control what the audience are doing so that we can actually carry on and get the show done in time.
And, Joan, you were saying earlier on that there's very little dance in it. So is that going to be harder for you?
No, I'm looking forward to that. I'm 35 now. I've danced like all my life, so I'm actually looking forward to just doing time. But saying that, the time warp I've done since I was about 4. Even in like every Halloween in my mum and dad's dance school, we're all there as kids going, "Let's do time warp again," just doing that little dance. So it's cool now to be in the actual production of Rocky Horror, doing the actual time warp.
Turning the clock back to Strictly, we were talking about earlier. Have you got thought about a winner?
This year, well, I mean, I'll probably get trolled to high heaven, but I think my brother's got a really good chance. I mean, I've picked my 4 finalists already. I think it'll obviously be Ashley and Faye, who are amazing. I think Joe Sugg and Stacey. And obviously Joe Sugg and Stacey are the ones with less experience, but Faye and Ashley are absolutely phenomenal. But we'll see. I think it's one of those 4 anyway.
So are they going to be coming to see you here?
I mean, Stacey's from Brighton. I'm going to text her in a minute, see if she's around. So they'll probably come, yeah.
So does that make a difference to have people in the audience that you know? Do you like that? Or the reason I asked that question, I was talking to Brian Capron from Coronation Street, who's now in Dr. Dolittle.
Yeah.
And he said, "I don't want to know."
I quite like knowing.
I think the only thing it does make you do is that when we know that people are there that are important to us, or, you know, you sort of start questioning what you're doing. So even on Flashdance, after we'd been doing, you know, we'd probably done, 300 and whatever shows by that point. And still, when, like, we've got, like, producers coming in or parents or whatever, you start going, like, you start saying a line, you go, oh, is my American accent good? Oh, should I be having my hand here? Should I be leaning against this? You start to think about things too much, and that's the only thing I think that's a bit bad about people you know coming in, because you want it to be the best that it is, and actually often when, you know, the best performances you put on are the ones that you just do and are more natural. So I think that's the only difference.
But I think it'll be exciting, and it'll be interesting to see the reactions of, especially family members, what coming to watch Rocky Horror, because it'll be so different to ones that have already done it. It'll be so different to Flashdance, so different to Thoroughly Modern Millie, or like Top Hat or anything like that. It's going to be, I'm going to be really interested to find out what they think.
And have you got favourite numbers in the show? I know you've only been doing it for a few days, but...
My favourite is a song called Damn It, Janet, which we've actually done we've recorded a version of it that's going to be released on Spotify and iTunes, some of that.
Is it a jukebox show, like Mamma Mia and a lot of the other shows that are going round?
Well, not really. I think Mamma Mia and shows like that, you know, they have to try and shoehorn a storyline to fit the songs, whereas, you know, this was written... You know, the songs were written for the show. So, you know, although this storyline is bonkers, it's not like, oh my God, how do we get to that song and make that? You know, I think a lot of the time in Mamma Mia, when I last saw it, it was like the segue between the song was like, so like, oh, okay, really? That's how you got there? Okay, fine. But, you know, it works because it's ABBA's music and it's great. But, you know, this is very much, there is a story there and there is like a deeper meaning where it's like, you know, just be yourself. And it, you know, the whole thing is just great.
The tour is going on, it's starting in Brighton, but it's going on for a long time. So how does that work when you're in a tour that long? Do you get bored with it?
Not really. We've just done 16 months of Flashdance, haven't we?
I'll tell you what, it depends what you do on your time off. Because, you know, the first 6 months of Flashdance, we just spent a lot of time in the pub and having a lovely time. And then we thought, well, actually, we have every single day, apart from the matinee days, off. So what should we do with our time? So we thought, I'd already written a musical called Eugenius, which was on in London. And we thought, well, why not let's write a musical ourselves? So myself and Joe have written a musical, which we're going to start workshopping at the beginning of next year, which is very exciting. And that's what we did with our time. So who knows what we'll do this time?
Maybe another one.
Maybe another musical, yeah. Maybe. We'll start with the pub, though.
It's always a good idea to start with the pub.
Yeah.
Now, you two have been in several shows together. So are you just actors who happen to be in the same show, or is there perhaps another connection?
We didn't know each other before Flashdance,
did we? No, I think Flashdance did so well over those things, and we worked so well together, and every time that, you know, we've ever had reviews or anything like that, they always pick out, oh, these guys have got so much chemistry together and work well together and stuff. So I think when they were casting Rocky Horror, they looked at the Flashdance thing and they went, well, that really works, this would be great for this show, and that's why we were cast for this. And, you know, we do, and also we're best mates, you know, outside of the working situation anyway, so it kind of works well.
Yeah.
And the final question, why should people come and see Rocky Horror?
Because it's just bonkers and they're going to have the best night out ever.
If you want to ruin your Christmas, don't come. That's the message. If you want the best Christmas you've ever had with the best cast of Rocky Horror in the world...
On the 45th anniversary.
45th anniversary. We met Richard O'Brien the other day and he said it was his favourite...
Show.
The very favourite cast is it's going to be so much fun, and we can't wait. So, come along.
I was talking there to Joanne Clifton and Bed Adams, who were giving us an insight into the Rocky Horror Show, which also stars Dom Jolly as the narrator, and runs at the Theatre Royal until Saturday, January the 5th. But if Rocky's not your scene, how about a trip to Rottingdean Village Hall on Saturday the 22nd of December, where at 7:30 you'll be able to watch the classic Hollywood musical film White Christmas, starring, of course, Rosemary Clooney and Bing Crosby. Tickets are just £5 each, and you can even buy a mince pie or two and a glass or two of mulled wine to enjoy while you're watching the film. There are limited numbers of advance tickets available from either the Windmill Bakery in High Street, Rottingdean, or the Chapel Antique Centre, which is opposite the Village Hall in Park Road, Rottingdean. And I hope to see you there. And that's just about it from me, Chris English, and this edition of At Home This Morning. So until we meet next over the airwaves in about 4 weeks' time, and before our final piece of music, there's just time for me to repeat those all-important contact details. For more information on action on elder abuse, the helpline number is 080-8808-8141, and the helpline is manned Mondays to Fridays, 9 to 5pm. For tickets to see either the Rocky Horror Show or Abigail's Party at the Theatre Royal, just go to www.atgtickets.com, or better still, go to the box office in New Road in person and avoid the dreaded booking fee. If you'd like more information on preparing for the winter from Age UK Brighton, you can call them on 01273 720 603. Again, Monday to Fridays, 9 to 5. But now there's just time for me, Chris English, to thank you for listening to this edition of At Home This Morning. And to again thank my executive producer, Richard Davis, for all the technical operation matters. But my final thanks must go to you, our listener. And so until we meet again over the airwaves, happy Christmas. And whatever you do, please keep safe and warm. Bye for now.
At Home This Morning is a Grey Matters production,